So I don't know if you've heard, but there is a conference next weekend called Relationships Matter. Hope that you can come and be a part of that. Now listen, so I've overheard some people talking and saying, well, I don't need to go to this conference because fill in the blank, for whatever reason. So here's my pitch to you at the beginning of this time, why you should come to the conference this weekend, okay? Maybe you come and maybe you don't need to sit through the conference. Okay, fair enough. There's some other ways that you could serve. Look at it as a ministry opportunity. Maybe you could serve by helping out with the meals. I know there's signups out there and a lot of people have already signed up, but maybe you could sign up for that and help with the meals with that. Maybe you could help with childcare. I know it looks like every time slot is filled. Trust me, we could use more people. The more, the merrier, they always say when it comes to childcare. And so we could use more people helping with childcare each night during those sessions. But here's another pitch for why you should come. And I talked about this when we had our 10th through 12th grade meeting last week as we were talking about the upcoming school year and the teens. And I've talked about it, I think, in here before as well. And it's this. So when I was in high school, my dad, in his effort to try to get me to be more friendly and more outgoing, he had me listen to this cassette tape on how to win friends, how to work a room, how to make friends, that sort of thing. And the one thing, the singular thing that I remember from that is this one section where it talks about being at a party and having the guest mindset versus having the host mindset. And here's the idea, that if you are at an event and you are the guest, you act a certain way, okay? Maybe you come in a little bit late. Maybe, you know, you come in and you look for people that you know and you go and you hang out with those people and then you maybe leave a little bit early or whatever. You act a certain way if you're the guest. But if you're the host of an event, you act totally different. You're there early. You're making sure that everything's taken care of. You're going around and you're working the room. You're making sure that everybody's enjoying themselves, that everybody has everything that they need. You stay late because you're the host. And the idea there is that, hey, anytime you go to an event where there's other people and you want to be friendly and you want to influence people, think of yourself not as a guest, but think of yourself as the host. With the youth group, the way we do this is, or my hope with it anyways, is that when we're at a time, especially where there's going to be a lot of visitors, like on a Wednesday night, think of yourself as the host. Make sure that everybody that comes in is spoken to. Look at it as a ministry opportunity. Be the host. Don't think of yourself as a guest. If you think of yourself as a guest, you'll come in and you'll sit down and you might not ever get up again until it's over and you might not have spoken to anybody but one or two people. And so for us in here, for the Sunday night crowd, I want to make this pitch to you, okay? Or this challenge. Come to the marriage conference. Come to the Sunday all day long. I know it's a long day. Come Monday through Wednesday. Even if you don't think you need it. And if you don't think you need it, or if you do, think of it as a ministry opportunity. The hope is that we're going to have visitors coming into our building, that we're going to have people from the community who have maybe seen Alan on TV or have heard something on the radio about it or have been invited by somebody else. And we're going to have these people coming into our building who are coming for this conference. But my hope would be that they come in and they not only get this relationships conference, but they also say, hey, this is a church that I want to be a part of. This is a church here where the people are loving and kind and gracious and compassionate. They welcomed me. I was spoken to. This is a place that I'd like to be. And so my challenge to you is come next week and use it as a ministry opportunity. Minister to the people that are coming to our building next week and build relationships with them. You know, what could be better at a relationships conference than for people to come and make some new friendships and relationships? So I hope that we can use this as an opportunity to make this be a place where people can come and feel loved and encouraged. That should be the hope all the time, right? For church, is that people can come here and be encouraged and welcomed and loved and know that, hey, God loves you and also the people that are here, we love you as well. And we want to show you that encouragement. And with that in mind, I want to look at a passage together. And it's one that should be familiar to you. It's over in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You've probably heard this passage before. Maybe if you've sat in on a wedding. I mean, this is a pretty go-to passage, especially when it comes to things like love. And I think also with things like relationships. And it is a little bit long, but I wanted to read it together tonight. Follow along as I read from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Here's what it says. Paul writes, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing." This is the part that might sound very familiar. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects. Love always trusts. Love always hopes. Love always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. It's beautiful. This is a beautiful, beautiful passage that Paul writes here. I mean, we could read this every day and still find something that touches our heart and changes the way that we think about love and how we should be loving others and interacting with other people in our relationships. And I think Paul defines for us in this passage some factors that define a healthy relationship. Just that whole section that we usually look at from verse 4 on talks about love and what love is. But the part I want to look at for just a moment is the part right before that in verses 1 through 3. Look back again, and I'm gonna read it again, but I want you to think about the words that are being spoken here and how challenging this message is that Paul gives us. It says, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal." Just that part right there. We can have tongues, we can say things that are beautiful, we can have all this knowledge, we can say things that have so much wisdom in them. But if we speak these things to each other, if we speak these things to the people of this world or to the people in our homes or to the people that we work with, and we say these things that maybe have a lot of knowledge in them, but there's no love there, it's described as a clanging cymbal. Now, I don't know, maybe you've had children in your house at the moment. Maybe it's been some years since you've had children in your home. It's like a practical joke sometimes, the people at birthday parties who give your children the band instruments, you know what I'm saying? Like, "Oh, thanks, this thing makes noise all the time. I'll never get that song out of my head. Oh, good, this thing, when you bang it together, makes a loud noise. They'll love that. We're going to put this up here in this closet." When you hear these noises and they're just constantly banging, like, it can be, what's the word I'm looking for? Annoying, maybe, right? Just this loud noise that clang, clang, clang. It's annoying after a while. Here Paul is saying, when we speak these things, if we speak something to somebody else and there's not love behind it, it's an annoying sound. It's a clanging cymbal. It's just noise with no benefit. There's nothing gained from it. To me, that's very challenging in the way that I speak to other people, the way that I speak to my wife or to my children or to people I come in contact with. Need to make sure that whatever I speak to them, and it might be the wisest thing I could ever say, that there needs to be love behind that message. Verse 2, it says, "If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing." You would think that somebody that has this great faith and this great knowledge, they'd be something. They'd be special. They'd have something that maybe other people wouldn't have. But if you have all these things, what good are they? They're nothing without love. "If I give all I possess to the poor," that's a noble thing to do. "If I surrender my body to the flames," but have not love, I gain nothing. We need to make sure that in all of our interactions with other people, in all of the ways that maybe we even think that we're doing something good, that our motivation behind it is love. And maybe that seems obvious, like I feel like as I'm saying it, I'm not telling you anything you've never heard before. But we need to be reminded of what Paul's saying here and how everything that we do, all of our relationship interactions with other people, our motivation behind those interactions needs to be love. These outcomes that are talked about here of nothingness, of emptiness, of loneliness, worthlessness, those are the opposite of what we invest our time and energy in. We're constantly, I think, in pursuit of being valued, of making something of ourselves, of being liked, of gaining all that we desire. But just as Paul points out, even if we have all these things that we've been pursuing, all these things that we desire, if we have all these things, but if we lack loving relationships with God and with others, we gain nothing out of life. And so that I want to transition from that into, I think, what's our most important relationship. Scripture also describes another relationship, ours with Jesus. And this relationship is the key to the health and growth of all other relationships that we have. As God purifies and focuses and humbles and empties us, we become people, I think, who are capable of loving others well. And that love that we read about in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, that's a love that He gives us. All of those descriptions of what love is, that's the love that God gives to us. When it talks about patient and kind, all of those things, that's how God has loved us. And that's also the love that we can offer to others. I want to try something here, okay? I want to read again from verse 4, and I want you to follow along. And instead of love, I want you to put your name in that blank. Maybe you've done this before. I'm going to say the name Andrew, since that's my name. But don't listen to Andrew. Put your own name in that spot as we read. Okay, let's try this. Verse 4. Andrew is patient. Andrew is kind. Andrew does not envy. Andrew does not boast. It sounds like that I am, but I'm not. Put your own name there. Andrew is not proud. Andrew is not rude. Andrew is not self-seeking. Andrew is not easily angered. Andrew keeps no records of wrong. Andrew does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Andrew always protects. Andrew always trusts. Andrew always hopes. Andrew always perseveres. And you could go on and maybe do that exercise even longer, but as you put your own name in that blank, does it feel awkward or uncomfortable? Does it feel untrue? Does it feel not right? Does it challenge you and make you think, man, I need to be doing some different things. I need to be more patient. I need to be more kind. I need to not envy as much as I've been doing. God fits all of those descriptions. He is all of those things when it talks about what love is. In my life, I know that when I'm not pursuing a connection with Christ as I should be, I begin to expect people to give me what only God can give. And so I become possessive, maybe a little bit demanding. And even if it isn't blatantly obvious to the world or to people I'm around or to my family, it's usually pretty clear to me internally when this is the case. I become self-focused. Maybe I see people as a commodity or an annoyance rather than as children of God. And I realize during those times that maybe I'm not loving them with sacrificial love. And it's during these times that God's love maybe doesn't flow through me the way that it should. However, I believe that as we pursue a closer relationship with God, that I find myself doing a better job of loving people the way that I should. Flip over to John chapter 13 for just a moment. Here Jesus talks about love and the importance of love when it comes to our relationships with each other. Verse 34 and 35, Jesus says this. He says, "A new command I give you, love one another." All right, first of all, it's not a new command. What's Jesus talking about here? The idea of loving one another, that's nothing new. That wouldn't have been shocking or surprising for Jesus or for any rabbi to say something like this, to say, hey, love one another. That's not a new command. So what's new about it? Well, let's continue. Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. Okay, well, that's a little bit different, especially as his followers are going to find out. The way that Jesus loved is different than the way a lot of people love. It's a very sacrificial love. And then verse 35, here to me is a key part that we need to put inside of our hearts. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So the way that people in our daily relationships, the way that people can know that we are being sincere and genuine, the way that people can know who Jesus is, oftentimes starts with the way that we love one another. And not just any kind of loving one another. Loving each other as Jesus has loved us. So being forgiving, being merciful, being compassionate, being kind and patient, and all of those things. If we want other people to see Christ in us, it starts with us loving each other. That's how people will know that we are a disciple of Jesus. Showing the love of Christ to other people can have a profound impact. Maybe you can think of someone in your life who, because of how they loved Jesus, because of the love that they showed for you, you saw Jesus in them. You saw the way that God is working in them. I can think of some people like that, who because of them, I was encouraged. Because of them, I felt like I was closer to God, that I knew more about the attributes of God because I could see them working in their lives. Another verse I want you to turn to is 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. We were in chapter 2 this morning, where Paul is saying to the church about how, you know, they were delighted to share not only the gospel, but their lives with them because they loved them so much. And in chapter 3, again, he kind of pours out this love on this church and how he cares for them. If you look at verse, kind of midway through verse 6, it says, he has told us that you always have pleasant memories of us and that you long to see us just as we also long to see you. Therefore, brothers, in all our distress and persecution, we were encouraged about you because of your faith. So because of the faith of these people, Paul was encouraged. He was able to do the work that he needed to do. Verse 8, for now we really live, since you are standing firm in the Lord. How can we thank God enough for you in return for all the joy we have in the presence of our God because of you? And I like this because here's some people, here's these people in this church that maybe think that what they're doing isn't all that special or amazing or great. Maybe they're not able to see how beneficial it is what they're doing. But Paul is telling them, hey, the way that you're loving us, the way that you're encouraging us, the way that you're living and standing firm in your daily lives, that is allowing us to get through our difficult times. And it's because of you, Paul says, it's because of you that we're able to do this good work. I've had people in my life who, it's because of them and the way that they've encouraged me that I was able to do some different things successfully, or I was able to do some things that maybe I didn't think that I could do. I know there was this one deacon at the church that I went to in high school, and he really spent a lot of time encouraging me. He all the time told me, Andrew, you need to get in youth ministry. Man, you'd make a great youth minister. You should do youth ministry. And then when I interned there later, always an encouragement to me, always building me up, always positive. Finally, when I worked at this church for about 6 years, he was my go-to source of encouragement all the time. And it's because of him, I feel like in a lot of ways, that I am who I am today. I can remember when I was a younger kid, when I was in Texas, my dad moved to Memphis, and my mom, who was teaching at the time, we stayed in Houston for the rest of the school year. And so there was some times where, you know, missed my dad. And there was a man there at the church who spent a lot of time with my younger brother. Now, he'd take us out to eat. He'd spend a lot of time building us up. And he really got us through a time where, you know, it was a little bit difficult and tricky. And he was an encouragement to us. There's people in our lives who, because of them and because of their love for us, we're able to do what we need to do. And my challenge tonight, again, for us, is to be the kind of people who because of the way that we're loving others, they can see Christ in us, and maybe later they can say, hey, it's because of you that my faith was strengthened. It's because of you that I was able to see Jesus more clearly and live for him. I think that's the kind of people we need to use. People that will look at us and say, hey, because of you, like Paul says, we have great joy. As we wrap this up, I ran across this news story. It's very odd. Okay, so there's this man. His name is Raven Felix Null, N-U-L-L, and he's 24 years old. And the title of the article was something like, man changes last name to get free hotel rooms. Okay, so here's what had happened. He changed his last name after becoming an adult, and he claims that the word null is incompatible with a lot of computer programming, which has led to many systems not recognizing him as a person. Okay, and so what he does is he'll go places and he'll like check in at a hotel and they'll get his last name and it's null. And so later when he checks out and they try to charge his account or whatever, it just doesn't, the computer can't process it because it keeps coming up as null. And so the programming fault means that the employee puts the word null into the surname box on an IT system, and it will recognize the word as meaning an absence of data, and it refuses to validate it. That's what the word null means. So the glitch often results in an IT failure where Raven isn't billed for the item he has bought. So it has this whole article talking about this, and it's kind of interesting. But then the very end of the article, I thought at least, turned extremely depressing. Listen to what it says. It said, but Raven is quick to point out that he didn't change his name to get free stuff. Rather, he claims he did it to reflect his estrangement from his family. He chose the word null because he said it means nothing, meaning I am not connected to my family in any way anymore. And I was like, whoa, this just got really serious and pretty sad. This article, it started off as this funny thing, like, oh, this guy has found some way to kind of get free hotel rooms and free things, free items, has turned into really a statement on how this man has not felt loved. He's not seen what love looks like within the context of family, so much so that he has changed his name to a last name that means nothing. And sadly, I think there's countless others who maybe feel the same way. There are people all around us who feel like maybe they don't belong. Maybe it's to their specific physical family. Maybe it's just they feel like they don't belong anywhere. And they feel like they're missing out on something more. I believe that we need to show them that this is a church and a ministry here that they can become a part of. That, hey, listen, whatever your background is, whatever's going on in your life, this is a family that does want you to be a part of it. This is a family that does love you and accept you and wants to pray for you and be there for you. And that we show them the love of Jesus. John 17, verse 23 says, I am in them and you are in me. May they experience such perfect unity that the world will know that you sent me and that you love them as much as you love me. I believe we have been sent into this world, and one of our main jobs is to build loving relationships. We are to build loving relationships with people around us. And by doing so, the hope is that people will see the way that we're loving them, and they'll see Jesus working in us, and they'll want to come to know him as well. Tonight, maybe you're here, and maybe you feel sort of like the man who changed his last name. Maybe you feel like you don't have a place to belong. Maybe you're looking for a family to be a part of, and maybe you want to become a part of God's family. Or maybe more likely, maybe there's someone in here tonight who hasn't been loving in their relationships the way that God intends for them to be. Maybe they haven't been patient or kind. Maybe they've been envying too much or boasting too much or living in such a way to where you need to make a change tonight. And you want to do that by being surrounded by your loving church family who wants to pray for you and encourage you and lift you up. Whatever you need tonight, whether it's becoming a Christian or whether it's receiving prayers and encouragement from your church family, won't you come now as together we stand and sing?